the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line from Southern California, Dr. Garth Nicholson. And Dr. Nicholson held a professorial position at the MB Anderson Clinic in Houston, Texas, and of course was on the editorials board of a number of scientific journals, and has in the neighborhood of about 600 peer-reviewed articles in the literature, which is quite unparalleled. Very, very few people have very many peer-reviewed articles. He's a prolific writer. He's certainly known throughout the scientific world for his work. Of course, we're going to be talking to him today about his experiences as he began to delve into the Gulf War illness and the chronic fatigue syndrome and the experiments that were done on the prisoners at the Huntsville prisons in Texas, and, of course, what happened to he and his wife as a result of their effort to help people who have these terrible, terrible diseases, these terrible disabling diseases. And, of course, he's written a book which we carry called Project Daylily. Now, it's a faction book. It's written as fiction, but it's really based upon fact and the incredible experiences he and his wife had. Dr. Nicholson, thank you so very much for being with us this evening. Dr. Nicholson, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so very much for being with us as we begin to, of course, go into the background of the fascinating book you've written, Project Daylily. So, just for our listeners who may not know who you are, could you just give us a little rundown, fill in the blanks from what I said?
Well, I'm currently the president and chief scientific officer of the Institute for Molecular Medicine here in California. And this is a nonprofit research institution dedicated to discovering new diagnostic and therapeutic protocols for treatment of chronic illnesses. And we deal with a lot of different types of chronic illnesses. We work with autoimmune illnesses, for example. Fatiguing illnesses, like you mentioned, Gulf War illness and chronic fatigue syndrome are two of the most common fatiguing illnesses, but there are others as well. We also work with rheumatic diseases, things like rheumatoid arthritis and sarcoidosis and other rheumatic diseases. We work on cardiopulmonary problems, such as asthma, also cases of atypical pneumonia. And we also are involved in cardiovascular problems, such as vasculitis, coronary problems, all sorts of problems associated, as it turns out, with infections.
All right, fine. Of course, you actually, of course, have been working with a lot of people with neurological diseases, because there really was a very, very high incidence of so-called Lou Gehrig's disease with the veterans of the Gulf War, weren't they?
Yes, there were several times higher incidence than expected of Lou Gehrig's disease, or ALS, Gulf War veterans. Also, multiple sclerosis and other neurologic illnesses as well.
So, of course, there's been a conscious effort to convince both physicians and the public that Gulf War illness was really nothing more than post-traumatic stress. But as you begin looking into this, why you found, of course, a great deal more. We'll cover that when we get back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Garth Nicholson. And could you go ahead and just give us a little bit of the background of certainly the background of the Gulf War analysts for our listeners out there, and how this more or less overlaps this series of symptoms and signs of this physical illness, how this overlaps with chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia, which affects really about 2 million people are said to have had chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, and then somewhere between about a third to a half of the veterans of the First Gulf War?
It's approximately a third of the veterans of the First Gulf War have come down with a variety of different problems. The most severe of those turn out to be illnesses that are essentially the same as chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia syndrome, except that they progress, and they can progress to a lethal form of the disease, which you don't often see in civilian cases of chronic fatigue syndrome, although it can happen and has happened. These people die of premature deaths with neurologic problems or cardiovascular problems or other problems, and they don't just have chronic fatigue. And we found out early on with the veterans coming back from the First Gulf War, that's at the time period when the Pentagon and the VA was trying to tell everybody that it was a psychological problem, post-traumatic stress disorder, and none of the signs and symptoms fit with that, or let's say the certain signs and symptoms didn't fit with post-traumatic stress disorder at all. They were medical signs and symptoms, and we found that they were due to chronic infections. And one of the chronic infections that we found, which is the story Project Daylily, is an infection that actually had been worked on by the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology for several years. The experts turns out, all in the Army or worked for the Army. And Army pathologists at the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology had been working on this infection. It turns out this is what at least 40% of the Gulf War veterans who came down sick had, this particular infection.
Now, weren't they working on it as sort of a biological warfare agent?
Well, that's what we think, because it was being tested in the prison system under the guise of a vaccine development program that was sponsored by either pharmaceutical companies or directly by the Army. And various prisoners were coming down sick and dying, and the guards were getting sick. And we got involved because the guards and their family members came to us for assistance. As a matter of fact, just yesterday, one of these gals called us up on the telephone. Her husband was the assistant warden in the Walls Unit, which is a condemned prisoner unit in Huntsville, Texas, at one of the prisons.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Garth Nicholson. And Dr. Nicholson was talking about this chronic fatigue type of illness that seems to be related to a mycoplasma infection. He was mentioning that just recently why the wife of one of the wardens there at the Huntsville Clinic had called him. Pick up the story there.
Well, what happened was that the entire family had become sick because of these infections that were being tested in the prison system, had passed to the prison guards and the administrators and the healthcare workers at the prisons, and they took the infections home and they passed to their family members. And this one family was absolutely riddled with disease. In fact, the daughter was diagnosed with ALS at Baylor College of Medicine. But she didn't have a real ALS or true ALS. She had an atypical form, which means that most of the diagnosis was presented as ALS, but there were some atypical aspects to it. And this really concerns the infection that she had. And when she found that she had this Mycoplasma fermentans that we also found in the Gulf War veterans, she was placed on antibiotics as quickly as possible. And eventually she recovered, and she went on to have two healthy children and lead a normal, healthy life. And she was given a life expectancy of 2 years when we met her. So these people have all kinds of different problems. It turns out this family, the husband retired, they went to Kansas, and now they're living in Oklahoma, and they're all recovered and doing quite well now. And we've seen this over and over again, where people are denied proper care and treatment because to hide essentially the types of illnesses that they harbor. And in this particular case, we feel that they actually were exposed to a biologic weapon. And the reason for that is that when we started studying this one infection, this Mycoplasma fermentans, which is one of the infections that we found on the Gulf War veterans in more detail, we found that there were some unusual genes associated with it. And one of the genes happened to be from the HIV virus, the envelope gene. And this told us that there was something very peculiar going on, because there's no reason why that particular gene would be associated with this bacterial infection. And then when we started studying this further, we found out that, well, one of the things that this infection does is it invades cells very quickly, and that may be the reason why this particular gene was inserted. But there were other genes as well, genes to improve the survivability of the organism, to make it more heat resistant, and so on. And all these smack of weaponization. They just smack of modifying an existing pathogenic microorganism to make it more pathogenic and to make it more survivable out in the real world. And so it just, to us, it just smacked of a biologic weapon. And that's what we hypothesized was in play at this particular prison and in some of the veterans that came back from the first Gulf War. Now, unfortunately, in the second Gulf War, we also have veterans that are coming back, and the DOD is trying the same story all over again, that they're suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. And I don't think that's the case. But epidemiological studies, both done in Kansas and done in the UK, support the notion that these infections are probably picked up in the vaccine. So you can see why they want to hide this fact from the American people, that these might be friendly fire casualties that we're seeing. Not only from the first Gulf War, where there are over 150,000 that are sick, but also now from the second Gulf War, that soldiers are coming back, veterans are presenting with some of these unusual signs and symptoms. So we have the problem, history is repeating itself all over again, and that is unfortunate, because we thought that we'd put it behind us and that we'd buried our mistakes, but that doesn't seem to be the case.
Well, of course, the thing is that when you began to look into this, that's when your whole life began to unravel. In other words, when you were simply, working there at the MB Anderson Clinic and doing your research, that was all well and good. But when you began looking into this possibility of a biological warfare agent, which of course is in violation of the various treaties that we passed, that have been signed and supposedly the law of our land, when you began looking into that, why then of course you came under tremendous pressure. Would you like to get into that, because that's really is the subject of your book, Project Alien. What happens to a scientist, when he begins to try to get to the bottom of a disease that is afflicting literally millions of people in America?
Well, literally my whole life was turned upside down, and that of my wife's as well. I mean, it literally destroyed my career in Texas, and I was an endowed full professor. I held a very prestigious position, the David Bruton Chair in Cancer Research. I was a professor and chairman of a large department and had approximately 100 people working for me. And they, that is the administrators at the Texas Medical Center, went after me to the point where they hounded me so much that I just decided to leave because of the pressure and of the attempts on our lives. And this is covered really in the book. I had a superior of mine who was shot in the back of the head in his office. I've had two of my students that died under mysterious circumstances. It became a very unsafe place for us to work. And the book goes into that in detail and how we escaped many times. And so we decided that we were pressing our luck a little bit too much, so we needed to get out. And so we did. We left Texas and came to California, and we set up a nonprofit research institution to study these chronic illnesses that so many people are suffering from.
Well, now, the superior, the gentleman that was shot in the back of the head, wasn't he a retired officer, either Air Force or military, colonel or something? And he had told you within a few minutes before he was executed that he was going to come forward and talk about the things that you were delving into?
Yes, he was actually planning on blowing the whistle on the prison experiments because he didn't like it. He didn't believe in it. He thought it was wrong, and he thought it was totally unethical. They were also involved in some nursing home scandals where outside of San Antonio there were some rest homes or nursing homes which were acquired basically to test some of these organisms. So I didn't even know it at the time that my own institution was involved in some of these horrific experiments. And so this is one reason why they went after me and went after my wife. And so it was a real horror story for us. And we turned it into a medical thriller, which is really what it is, and finding the answers for people. That's a success of the story, and escaping and telling the tale is the other aspect of it, which is kind of interesting to a lot of readers.
Well, I think it's important to have the book out there, because I think in some respects you're far better off to be a big target than a small target, and when people sort of forget about you, that's when your life is really in danger. It has happened to a number of the people that I've interviewed who have been very courageous and have, I believe, been killed for it. The last one was Gary Webb, who'd written a treatise on the CIA and drugs. He we're told he committed suicide by shooting himself in the head twice.
Well, we've run into a number of things like that as well, and quite frankly, it's a very common technique to get somebody and either get them into an accident where they lose their lives or get them to so-called commit suicide. And in fact, some of my colleagues in Houston were down as suicides, and they weren't suicidal. We knew that. We knew what happened. We knew that they'd stumble across things and were very vocal about it, and so they presented a threat, and they were eliminated because of that. So we didn't want to find ourselves in that situation.
And Chris, I think it's very difficult for the average American to believe that this could really happen in the United States. And where is the FBI? Where is our police agencies doing something about it? And I'm sure that we have many good police officers, but many times people in key positions are there for one and only one purpose, and that is to cover up and prevent an effective evaluation of what happened. Now, whatever happened to the gentleman? You said he was shot in the head, I think, twice. He was your superior. Wasn't he retired Army colonel or Air Force colonel?
Well, he was a retired Air Force colonel and a physician, and he was the vice president for patient care at the institution. And unfortunately, he knew a lot about the programs, the classified programs that were going on in the military. So he had a background already in the sort of thing that we were involved in. So he was very... very kind to us, very supportive, and tried to help us whenever he could. I think what happened, he just overstepped the bounds, I guess, and it cost him his life.
And of course, but what about the investigation? You find somebody with two shots in the back of the head. Obviously this is a murder. What about the investigation of it?
Well, actually, he was shot six times in the back of the head.
Six times in the back of the head.
And back of the head and the shoulder in his office a few minutes after I had actually spoken to him early one morning. And the crime was never solved. And it was a professional hit because the person had gone in and escaped the institution and knew exactly where every security camera was located and knew exactly how to get in and out of the building and not be seen
by
anyone.
Who would know how to hire a professional killer, other than people who were professional killers?
Well, we can speculate a lot. We think we know who did it. In fact, our hypothesis is actually presented in the book, and I won't tip my hat on that. I want people to get the book and read it, because it goes into a lot more information than what we've just described on how these programs started and so on. We actually looked into this in much more detail, and we found that the microbe that we discovered in the veterans was actually probably a microbe that came back in Operation Paperclip after World War II, when the Nazi scientists were being brought back to the United States after being rounded up by the CIA, or then was the OSS and the Army after World War II. So it actually has its origin in Eastern Europe. They were testing these weapons in the death camps to see how effective they were, and we grabbed a lot of these scientists after World War II and brought them back, and then tried to refine further these weapons because we knew the Russians were doing the same thing.
And of course, they were very, very effective weapons of killing human beings. They're biological weapons. We're not supposed to be experimenting with them. And yet, of course, as we'll probably mention later, there have been well over 100 biologists or microbiologists who've died under very mysterious circumstances in the last few years. Isn't that right?
Oh, yes. One of these, as a matter of fact, was coming to visit us, who'd replicated some of our results on the genetic modifications in the Mycoplasma fermentans, and he died under very suspicious circumstances on his way to our institution.
Well, the book is Project A. Lily. I've read it. I read the original draft of it, or one of the original drafts, and I'll tell you, it's a book that's difficult to put down. If you'd like to know more, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Dr. Garth Nicholson. We're talking about his book, Project Daylily, and I was just saying, I have read the book, and I'll tell you what, it is a real thriller. Of course, I understand what Dr. Nicholson's talking about. There's a lot of fascinating information there. It's written for the layperson, but a doctor can certainly get a great deal out of it. And, of course, it meant a lot more to me because I've had the opportunity of actually interviewing a number of people who are describing the book. Of course, their names are changed, perhaps a few of the details are changed, but I certainly was very, very pleased to see them described. And these are heroic people, little people out there who have part of the puzzle. They're simply one dot on the chart, but you begin to collect these dots on the chart, and you begin to see truly a diabolical movement involving people in key positions in successive administrations and in science who are prostituting what they're doing, and they have applied their scientific knowledge and their brilliance not to helping people, but to learning how to destroy them more efficiently. What about the origin of the AIDS epidemic, and how does that play in here? You mentioned that these mycoplasma fermentans that you found had a gene from the HIV virus. Now, how could a gene from HIV get onto a mycoplasma unless it was inserted there, you know, in the laboratory?
Well, that's exactly what we think happened, along with some of the other genes. But another interesting aspect of this is that HIV/AIDS itself is a very complex, multiple infectious process, and it's not just the HIV virus, as most people think. The HIV virus is actually not pathogenic, although it does suppress the immune system, and this can result in a number of opportunistic infections getting hold in a person with the HIV syndrome, and that's what really kills people. And one of the most common one is the mycoplasma fermentans. And in fact, the Army's been studying this for years, been studying the mycoplasma as a cofactor in AIDS, and some people think it's the real pathogen in AIDS, and it really sets people up for the final events of AIDS, and then they get all kinds of opportunistic infections and then die.
And so basically it's a dual infection, HIV, and then this mycoplasma as well. And certainly they sort of work together. The HIV lowers the immune system, and then, of course, the mycoplasma can come in and actually invade the cells and kill them?
That's correct, and it does so in a very insidious way. And in fact, one of the pieces of the puzzle just came out. One of my colleagues in San Antonio just published a paper showing that toxins are released by the mycoplasma, and these toxins damage the cells in ways that we don't entirely understand. But he's been studying the respiratory effects, and he found that the toxin released by the mycoplasma really damages the respiration cells, the cells that line our lungs that were responsible for our breathing and so on. And these cells are literally killed by this toxic molecule, and so they have to be replaced. And if they're not replaced, then pulmonary damage, permanent pulmonary damage, can occur. So there are also some other things that we know are released from these little mycoplasmas when they get inside our cells. And these we've been studying in a little bit more detail. They're called activated oxygen species. And what that means is that they damage cellular structures by oxidizing them. And they damage our DNA, for example. And one of the critical structures in our cells...
Would you hold that thought for just a minute as we bring our other stations right back on board? Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Dr. Garth Nicholson. And he's certainly talking about how the mycoplasm works and actually destroys the cell, and certainly, at least certain parts of the cell, releases toxins. I can severely damage the cells of the lung. But you were going to be, I think, probably mentioned what they do to the mitochondria. This is the mycoplasm, which is associated with HIV. In other words, AIDS is not simply HIV infection, contrary to what most doctors and most people think. It is a combined infection. There's HIV, and most of the people have a mycoplasma. What percentage of people have the mycoplasma, do you think?
Well, it's at least 80%, according to the studies done by the Army, and it may even be higher because these infections are actually hard to detect. It can be detected, but it's really quite difficult because they hide inside our cells. And most tests are done with blood samples, and very little of these microbes get loose in the blood, so we can detect them.
All right. Now, what about, you were going to say that, I think you're going to talk about the mycoplasma. Was it hitting or attacking the mitochondria?
It does. The mitochondria are the little batteries inside our cells that provide the energy for all of our cellular functions. And there's some tissues, such as the tissues of the central nervous system, that require a lot of energy to operate. So, in fact, some of the nerve cells burn six times as much energy as other cells in the body. So they require these mitochondria inside the cells to be very active and produce a lot of high-energy substrates that the cell can use. And what happens is that the membrane of the mitochondria gets damaged by oxidation, by these molecules released from the mycoplasma, and it becomes leaky. And when it becomes leaky, it's just like stripping the insulation off a battery and then trying to put it in your flashlight. It won't work anymore because it's run down. The energy is escaped from the battery, and the same thing happens with our mitochondria. The potential across the membrane, the chemical potential, can't be maintained. And so that it's just like shorting out your battery, and they can no longer produce the high-energy molecules. And so this is what we found out happens, although we found some products that can reverse that and help patients with chronic fatigue quite a bit.
Now, you'd mentioned before something called Propax. Is there any? How can people get that? And, of course, are there any other products? What about CoQ10, for instance?
Well, there are a lot of lipid products and cofactors of lipid metabolism and so on that help. We've just gone directly to products that replace the damaged lipids entirely. And so these are all dietary products like Propex or NT Factor. And people can find out about these by going on our website, the Institute for Molecular Medicine, which is www.immed.org. Just think of immediate.org, and you'll find your way to our site. They can also just do a Google search or a Yahoo search and find us right away. And if they look under various categories and look under fatiguing illnesses, for example, they'll find articles on how we've used these products to restore mitochondrial function and to help people with their fatigue. And we've done studies on people during aging, because you lose a lot of mitochondrial function just naturally during aging. We've done studies on people with chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia syndrome. We've more recently done some studies with Gulf War veterans, and now we're just initiating a study with U.S. Navy SEALs in Afghanistan that are operating in a high altitude. All these individuals have problems with their mitochondria. Either they're being stressed and their mitochondria run down because of that, or because they have infections and their mitochondria are being damaged. And so they need to repair the membranes of the mitochondria, and that's what this dietary product does. It supplies the undamaged, unoxidized lipids so they can be naturally replaced through our normal metabolism. And that's the neat thing about this product, because we're not talking about taking a drug which could have potential side effects. We're talking about taking something that's completely natural that your body needs anyway and ordinarily would get through food, except that normally lipids are oxidized during food. And this is mainly why food becomes rancid, because oxidation occurs and things like lipids and proteins are damaged and they can't be used as easily as we think once they're damaged.
Now, how do you spell that? Propac, is that P-A-C-K or P-A-C?
No, that's P-R-O-P-A-X.
Oh, P-R-O-P-A-X, okay.
Propax. And there's a website, actually, www.propax.com. People can go on that and see some of the scientific studies that I've just mentioned.
All right, and is it taken by mouth, though? Is it in the form of pill or capsule?
No, it's a dietary supplement.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment or two with Dr. Garth Nicholson. We're talking about so many of the veterans of the first Gulf War, approximately a third of them, came back with a Gulf War illness, and many of these, of course, have chronic mycoplasma infections. Of course, the government did everything they could to conceal this. Dr. Nicholson has testified a number of times for Congress and very prestigious organizations. He's traveled. He was a visiting professor in Kuwait for a time, where many people have a great deal of illness following the first Gulf War. We'll be right back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Dr. Garth Nicholson, for talking about, of course, what they have found as they began looking into these fatiguing illnesses, as they began looking into the Gulf War illness. And, of course, there are many other diseases out there where we have multiple infections in the human body. One of the more interesting things is increasingly become apparent that so many people who have arterial disease and heart attacks have chronic infections as the basis for this. Oh, we think, oh, if we just take enough statin drugs and get our cholesterol down, that's going to be fine. But half of the people who have heart attacks have a normal cholesterol. So then what part do these chronic infections play in heart attacks? And are some of our younger people dying as a result of these chronic infections?
Well, we do know that. In fact, when the Gulf War veterans came back, we there was an unusual number of heart attacks among this generally young group, average age less than 25, and that was totally unexpected. And one of the reasons this happened was that they had infections like Mycoplasma fermentans, which can cause what's known as a vasculitis or an inflammation of the vascular system. And when this occurs, there are a lot of what are called pro-inflammatory molecules that are released into the circulation. These increase the clotting rate, and so a little clots or thrombi form in the blood, and these lodge in the capillaries in a variety of different organs. And when this happens in the heart, it can cut off the blood flow to the heart and eventually lead to ischemic heart disease and a major heart attack. And this is exactly what happened with a lot of the veterans. We see a lot of people that have these infections that have abnormalities in blood clotting properties and the presence of these thrombi in their blood. And that's, again, due to the vasculitis or the invasion of the endothelial cells that line all of our blood circulation, all of the capillaries and all of the venules and so on and so forth in our body. So this can be a very dangerous situation if it gets out of control. And we've seen a lot of people, particularly elderly people, are very high risk, and also the very young. And the very young are very interesting. One of the things that we found from the Gulf War was that as these infections slowly spread to immediate family members, the adults were being diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia syndrome, but often the children had some very unusual learning disabilities and behavioral disabilities, and they were often getting diagnosed with autism or attention deficit disorder or some of the other autistic spectrum disorders. And at first we didn't really understand what was going on there, but we knew that these infections could penetrate into the central nervous system and cause problems. And in a developing brain, this is exactly what you don't want to have.
Hold that thought for just a moment, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Dr. Garth Nicholson. So we have a caller from Johnstown, New York. I'm going to ask him to hold on for just a couple of minutes because I want to develop this idea of what's happening to the children. Now, we know from many studies that have been done, certainly the Regal Committee report, Senator Regal investigated the Gulf War illness. He felt that about 70% of the wives of veterans were sick. The wife came down with the disease. According to the Rockefeller Committee report, which we actually carry as a report from the Veterans Administration, they said about 40% of the wives of ill veterans were ill. And now Dr. Nicholson is saying that many of the children of the ill veterans who came back from the first Gulf War, these children were reported with autism or learning disorders or things of that sort. So obviously this is a communicable disease, despite the fact that the CDC and the NIH and the Veterans Administration do not want the American people to know the truth. Would that be a fair statement?
I think that's a fair statement. There's been a lot of red herrings put out, particularly in these autistic spectrum disorders. And, of course, this is not the only factor that's involved. We know that there are other factors, for example, heavy metal exposure, chemical exposure, and so on. All of these illnesses that I've been discussing are usually quite complex and involve a number of different factors, not just the infection that we've been talking about. So it's one thing to fight the infection, but other things have to be done to these patients as well. If they have the heavy metal exposures, to remove them. If they have chemical exposures, they have to be treated in certain ways to remove those chemicals from their body and so on and so forth. So they're really quite complex diseases.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to our first guest, who is Daryl, who's calling from Johnstown, New York. Hi, Daryl. Did you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I did. It's to my knowledge, in our brains, we have chemicals called endorphins, and they are they aid the antibodies in curing certain diseases, attacking certain germs in our body, and they are released only to my knowledge, and I could be wrong, by emotions. And I wondered if there was any other stimulant towards endorphins that would get them to release to aid in helping cure certain problems.
Okay.
I have another question.
Well, okay. What part do endorphins? Do endorphins play anything in part in what we're talking about, Dr.
Well, we really don't understand the role that they play, as well as any of the other neurotransmitter compounds that could be involved in these various neurologic illnesses. These are very complex relationships between the body and the mind, and when you have an infection involved, this kind of throws some of these systems out of order, and you do see some unusual things that come out of it.
All right. I think, Daryl, that endorphins really control pain, and this is the thing. Certain exercise will release endorphins. When you release the endorphins, they're almost like an opioid controlling the pain. Now, did you have another question for Dr. Nicholson?
No, just an experience that I had. You were talking about the military and how they don't want to, release certain information. I'm a two-tour Vietnam combat veteran, and in 1967, when I went into the service, and I was on my way over to Vietnam, what we had to do, because of the lack of dentistry within the Army, and orthodontists and things like that, what they had us do was, get in a group, and they gave us a very small toothbrush and a tube of toothpaste that was very high in fluoride and very abrasive. I believe they used a pumice. And we had to brush our teeth, each tooth one at a time, with this substance, and I wondered if that, destroyed a lot of our teeth by taking the enamel off the surface of our teeth.
I have no thoughts on that at all. Do you, Dr. Nicholson?
I really don't either, because I really don't have enough information to really comment on that.
No, I think Daryl...
Well, we all had to do it because there was a lack of dentistry within the service.
Okay, don't know anything about it, but thanks so much for calling. And let's go to Jeannie Soderman. Jeannie, did you have a question?
Well, Dr. Stan, I am on topic, and I did read Project Daylily, and Garth Nicholson, you're just a hero to me, writing this book, and it's a researcher, but on page 524, that's something very interesting that you wrote, and it was regarding the Nevada Trust, and I'm going to give you a website, because the Lear family of William P. Lear Sr., who invented the Lear jet, car radio, you name it. He was especially brilliant. Nevada Scams, that's scams.com. And there's two generations of the Lears that are putting lawsuits on this, and it will go to the United States Supreme Court. And you might be interested in that, Dr. Nicholson.
And, of course, for our listeners out there who haven't read the book, of course, there's talk about a Nevada Trust, which, of course, belongs to Dr. Nicholson's wife. Anything else you wanted to say, Jeannie?
No, that's it. And thanks, Dr. Nicholson, for your courage and being such a great guy.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Jeannie.
Well, thanks very much. I mean, one of the aspects of the book is how do you finance all these programs and keep it secret? And one of the things that we stumbled across was the fact that trusts were being misused to support some of these programs, like the MK Ultra program, for example, the Manhattan 2 program, which was the development of a variety of different biologic agents and vaccines against them and so on.
And so these were actually Nevada trusts, weren't they, and having to do with the gambling interests there in Las Vegas?
There were a number of different trusts. One was the Manhattan Trust, one was the Sterling Trust, one was the Sita Dharma Trust. All these were very large trusts that were supposed to be for humanitarian purposes, but they're being misused.
And, of course, there's a great deal of medical experimentation that is going on today that is not for the betterment of mankind, I fear, but more for the destruction of mankind. And that's a rather frightening concept, that scientists would actually engage in that sort of thing. But I'm sure that many times they are recruited into these programs. Would you have any comment on that? Because I've certainly looked at the information that's come out of these various reports of the Special Virus Cancer Project, which they were all supposed to be destroyed. The CIA project, all the records were going to be destroyed. They're not really very good. They didn't destroy them all, and we actually have some of those. I'm sure you've seen them as well. An awful lot of leading scientists were involved with the Central Intelligence Agency. Why would they do something like that?
Well, scientists are recruited all the time for various projects, and often they're given such a small piece, and they don't really understand the big picture, and they don't know how it fits in with other pieces, but they're offered contract money to pursue this line of research, and then they write up their reports and turn it back in, and often they never know what became of the research that they did, and often it's compiled and put together in some offices somewhere, in a covert way, and then that information is used. And so there are a number of different programs which have been going on. I mentioned the MK Ultra program, but there are all sorts of different classified programs that were going on where certain aspects of research they would contract out to certain people. There were over 120 universities in the United States that were involved in these kinds of projects, so this is not something that was done in a little corner laboratory. This was done in all the major pharmaceutical companies, all the major universities, and so on, were heavily engaged, and they were all reaping the economic benefits from these programs.
And yet, of course, an awful lot of the scientists ended up very, very dead. And in fact, the last one I remember, I had been found stabbed half a dozen times and stuffed in the trunk of his car with somebody set on fire. Why would anybody do that to a microbiologist? I mean, what could a microbiologist know that was so dangerous? And as you begin to read the book Project Daylily, I think that you'll begin to get a picture of why they would want to eliminate people and why Dr. Dickelson left his tenured position at MD Anderson Clinic, a fascinating adventure story. The only trouble is, certainly there's an awful lot of truth in this story. Well, what sort of response have you gotten from the scientists and others who've read the story?
Well, we've actually gotten a lot of good response. I haven't gotten any negative response yet, but then again, they probably wouldn't tell me directly about it. But we have a lot of good feedback. In fact, we have a website for the book, and people can actually read the comments from some of the leading scientists in the world. There's a Nobel laureate, for example, and several department chairmen that have made comments on the book. So that's projectdaylily.com. It's run together as one word.
All right, fine. That's projectdaylily.com. And we have another caller. Let's see who it is. Who is calling?
Lorna?
Hi, did you have a question for our guest?
Yes. As far as mercury exposure and that type of thing, I believe that my daughter, through her shots, had some problems because she had what they call the lazy tongue syndrome and started stuttering.
Now you're talking after her vaccination shots?
Yes. And I was wondering what his suggestion would be as far as detoxing children.
All right, you're talking about detoxifying children. Now, did she have any contact with anybody with the Gulf War illness? Was this just a direct something that followed after her immunizations?
I think it was directly after her immunizations.
All right. Do you have any thoughts at all on that, Dr. Nicholson?
Well, we see the parallel between what happened, for example, in the Gulf War experience, where the multiple military vaccines were studied and shown by epidemiologists to be directly related to Gulf War illness after the Gulf War. And this was studies done in the U.S. as well as in Great Britain. Now we see the parallels in children who are undergoing developmental change at an early age, and they're given all these multiple vaccines, and there's an alarming rate of autism and autistic spectrum disorders in these children. And is there a relationship between those and the multiple vaccines? I think there is. But one of the ways in which this is being studied is that they choose a particular vaccine or group of vaccines, and then they study the relationship between that vaccine and illness, and that's not the way you do this type of study. You've got to take all of the vaccines and study them all at once, unfortunately, because it's probably the multiple vaccines. The vaccines themselves can be very immune suppressing, and either contaminants in the vaccine or opportunistic infections that are in the environment can get in these children and take hold, and then there are other exposures as well, either heavy metals, some of which are present in the vaccines, or some chemical exposures in the environment, and all of this can combine to give these developmental and learning disorders that we see in these children.
Well, one of the things that's always bothered me is that certainly we know in the original polio vaccine that they gave all of us, there were all the monkey viruses, and that was in the rhesus monkey. One of those, of course, was a cancer-producing virus, SV40, so then they switched over to the green monkey, and we got all of the viruses from them. And then sometimes we have, you know, the vaccines that are grown in chicken eggs or embryos, and then we get all the viruses. Are any of those viruses harmful to people, or do we have any way of knowing?
Well, there are studies, for example, that have followed, for example, you mentioned the SV40 virus, which is known to be a cancer-causing virus under certain conditions, so these viruses can contribute to pathogenic events. There's no doubt about it. And one of the other problems in the vaccines, one study that was done showed that 6% of them are contaminated, for example, with mycoplasma. So 6% doesn't sound like a large number, but when you are vaccinating thousands and thousands of children, all of a sudden the numbers become very realistic.
Well, Lorna, do you have any suggestions at all as far as Lorna? What could she do, or what should she do as far as her daughter is concerned?
Well, you know, the thing that we tell people that have these problems is that, number one, you have to get to an expert that study these so that you know exactly what you're dealing with. That's the first thing. The second thing is, you've got to try and determine if they've been exposed to heavy metals, to chemicals, to some of these opportunistic infectious agents and so on. Once you have that information, then you can proceed on some kind of a treatment program for these children.
Well, I don't know that there's that many experts, and the cost involvement might be not possible for us right now to hire an expert in the
field. This is a problem that we all face. And we have people coming to us all the time, and one of the first things that they tell us is that, you know, I'm broke. I've been to see 50 physicians. They can't figure out what's wrong with me. I've got this problem, that problem, whatever. And we try and help them. So if there are people out there that, you know, we'll try and help them. They can send an email, which is the best way to contact us, and we'll try and help them. We can't make referrals because we're a nonprofit institution, but we can point them in some general directions where they can get help.
How would it be the email address that people would send to?
Well, it's on our website for the Institute for Molecular Medicine, again, which is www.immed.org. Just remember, immedia.org. Or they can look it up on Yahoo, for example. We do try and help people that have these problems.
And, of course, the first thing you have to do, Lorna, you have to make a diagnosis. You have to find out, I mean, really what the basis for it is. So why don't you send an address to Dr. Nicholson. Go ahead.
Okay, I also wanted to say, I don't know, have you ever heard of G.I. Guinea Pig, the book?
What's that?
It's called G.I. Guinea Pigs. It was a book about experiments and stuff they were doing on the World War II veterans.
Well, we've had misuse of military personnel ever since probably the Civil War for various medical experiments.
And
Guinea
Pig, my dad, it was really funny because he was in the Veterans Hospital in California, and all of a sudden somebody had the book, and he's like, well, wait a second, that's me. And he was in a picture. He was decontaminating somebody from radiation and nuclear exposure with a whisk broom, sweeping them down.
I will tell you, the tragedy is that they experiment on our men in the military. It's criminal activity, and yet those people have no comeback at all. This is well covered in the Rockefeller Committee report from the Veterans Administration, Mr. Carey. They use our military as guinea pigs. That's why I will not advise any young person to go into the military, because you lose your rights, and if they destroy your life or kill you experimenting on you. Why, there's never any repercussions. It's one thing to be willing to die to protect your country. It's another thing to be used as a guinea pig without your consent or knowledge. Thank you so much for calling. Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
All right, fine. And so our guest this evening is Dr. Garth Nicholson. His book is entitled Project Daylily. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. It's a fascinating adventure story. You know, in fact, you couldn't make up anything this incredible, and yet, of course, it is based upon the true story of Dr. Nicholson and his wife, who stumbled on a mass series of experiments we're carrying out on, of course, on prisoners at Huntsville and other prisons, and, of course, on our servicemen would appear in the Gulf War. And the great tragedy is, we're talking about several hundred thousand veterans of the first Gulf War are ill, and we know at least 25,000 of them died. A very successful experiment. Well, Dr. Nicholson, we've got about 3 minutes to wrap up the program. What what was your thought you'd like to leave with our listeners tonight?
Well, we've been talking about the book Project Daylily, and the more people know, I think the better armed they are to deal with these issues. The worst thing in the world that we can do is to hide our heads in the sand and pretend that these things don't exist and that our government is just a benign entity that is looking out for us, because often it's not. And some of the people in power are truly vicious and even evil. And we need to expose these people and get them out of government positions and get them out of laboratory positions where they can do harm to other individuals. And unfortunately, there is a program called eugenics that has been persuasive in the United States ever since the beginning of the last century. And this program exists and is still continued to this day. And there are people promoting this type of program to reduce world population and reduce the pressure, they think, on the United States of America by limiting the population of the world. But these issues and these ideas, I think, are absolutely foolhardy, because the methods that are being used, infectious agents, for example, cannot be controlled. You cannot control a microbe. You cannot control a microorganism. It will ultimately come back. And you would have thought that we'd learned this from Plum Island and Lyme disease, which originated in Old Lyme, Connecticut, just across the bay from Plum Island off of Long Island. And once these diseases get out, then they spread, and Lyme disease is spread all across the United States and into Canada, and it will continue to spread. And by the way, one of the most important co-infections in Lyme disease is a mycoplasma. And in fact, that's one of the reasons I've been asked to speak at a number of Lyme disease conferences, because most people weren't aware of this. They were aware of some of the other co-infections in Lyme, like Ehrlichia and Babesia and Bartonella, but they weren't aware of the mycoplasma. And this is the most prominent co-infection in Lyme disease. So these types of diseases can lead to chronic illnesses. In some cases, they can progress to lethal illnesses. And so we're not talking about something that's some mild form or somebody else's problem. We're talking about something that could be your problem, and it could be your life.
Amen to that. Well, Dr. Nicholson, thank you so very much for being with us this evening, and we look forward to having you back on our program in the not-too-distant future.
Well, I'd love to come back.
Okay, God bless you. Good night. All right, that was Dr. Garth Nicholson. I hope you've enjoyed our interview with him this evening. If you'd like, of course, a copy of the entire hour-long tape, well, I would make it available by calling 1-800-544-8927 at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and everybody dependent on those of you who listen to our programs to help us as we reach out across America 5 hours every day, and then we on a weekend program trying to get people to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men against truly wicked forces and of course, ultimately for the survival of Christian civilization. There are people who would destroy Christian civilization, and there were people who would destroy the sovereignty of our United States, and many of them are working at the highest levels of our government today. Now, certainly if you'd like to get the book or Project Daylily or know more about it, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to begin to put a lot of this into its perspective, we do have a video, a talk I gave called Planned Population Reduction. That's Planned Population Reduction, and it's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We actually have a 4-tape set on the Gulf War illness. We have a 4-tape set on population control. We have a video on population control. We've written the population control monograph, where we simply quote the people who talk about the importance, the vital importance of eliminating 90% of the world's population. We take you to Elberton, Georgia, and the great stone monument there, the American counterpart of the British Stonehenge, which is a great occult monument where they have satanic ceremonies. And I've been there on several occasions, and there engraved in stone in 8 different languages is the 10 commandments that come from the pit of hell. And point one is maintain the world population at 500 million in constant balance with nature. And people say nothing like that could happen. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I believe it can. I believe it's coming. I believe it's coming very, very rapidly. In fact, Barbara Mark Suppert, one of the wealthiest women in the world, wrote a book in the original manuscript, which we have copies of. She wrote about, her book was channeled to her by, I believe, a demonic spirit. She called it the Christ spirit. The Christ spirit that told her that, you know, the Revelation 6:8, and look and behold a pale horse, and the rider upon him was death, and of course power was given unto them, and Hades followed close behind, and power was given to kill a quarter of the population of the world with by the sword, and by hunger, and by pestilence and death. And then she went on to talk about how there were people that just wouldn't evolve to the higher levels. They were about a quarter of the world. They were going to have to be eliminated. And then she went on to say, that is not your job, my dear. That is ours, for we are the riders of the pale horse, death. A woman who ran for the vice presidency of the United States in 1984, Democratic nomination against Geraldine Ferraro. There really are people out there like Jacques Cousteau who talked about the necessity of eliminating 365,000 people a day. If you'd like to verify what we're saying, we'll send you the pages from the UNESCO Courier in November of 1991. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Go to our website, radioliberty.com. You can listen to our internet programs 5 hours a day. And then tell other people about our program. Pray for America. Pray for revival. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection, and so till we're together again. May the Lord be with you.
skies for amber.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming in from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Daniel Sheehy. And we had heard him speak because we've had him as a guest before. He writes on the immigration invasion. And I don't know how many of you saw the pictures just this last week of 500,000 illegal immigrants who have violated our laws, demonstrating peacefully on the streets of Los Angeles for their rights as immigrants to our nation, as illegal immigrants to our nation. And this didn't happen just in Los Angeles. It happened all across the nation. These demonstrations are carefully planned. They cost a great deal of money. They're organized by the Communist Party and a number of organizations affiliated with the Communist Party and funded by the Ford Foundation and LULAC and Maldave and financed by your government and your tax money, because the people in government want the illegal immigration here so they can create a multicultural society, a multilingual society, so they can destroy the culture of this nation and merge us with Mexico and with Canada and eventually with all of the rest of the Northern Hemisphere. It is a long-range plan because we have people in Washington, D.C. who have no loyalty to America. Their loyalty is to this globalist dream of a new world order and a new world religion under a new world ruling elite. Daniel, thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
Hi, Dr. Stan. Thank you for having me on your program.
Well, of course, Daniel was speaking at a meeting. Did you speak at that meeting last Saturday?
On Saturday, no. I enjoyed your talk very much, as always, but I was introduced and very kindly, and the audience was told that the newly expanded edition of my book, Fighting Immigration Anarchy, will be out in bookstores next month and online later this month.
I hope you'll get me a copy of it, and then we'll want to get you on. We'll probably carry that book to Radio Liberty because I think it's so important that people know how to get hold of your book. I thought it was excellent before, and I'm sure expanded, it's even better still. So give me your impression. What do you think of these mass demonstrations for immigrant rights? Why don't they ever call them illegal immigrants? Why do they all call them immigrants?
Well, of course, this is all part of the bigger picture, the bigger scheme. And these are Marxist foot soldiers. Many of these people have no idea what they're doing. They just do what they're told to do. And as you explained earlier, the Hispanic separatist organizations, which are funded by the wealthy tax-exempt foundations such as the Ford Foundation, are financing and organizing these massive protests. Obviously, these poor Mexican peasants who are living illegally in the United States, They aren't organizing themselves, organizing these massive demonstrations and marches in dozens of cities across the country, big and small. This is being organized by much more powerful groups with a lot of money.
And I think this is what the average American doesn't know. I mean, you read in the newspaper, you know, people are just all organized by word of mouth. And if you honestly believe that, why you've been reading Time magazine too long? Like, there really is a communist movement. It's been here. It works on our college campuses. Many times it's been funded by the Rockefeller and Ford and Carnegie Foundations for the better part of a century. And the average American has no idea that the world communist movement was created by people of great wealth, the ideal enemy. Well, Daniel, certainly, if you tell people about the fact that there are Marxists involved, what sort of response do you get?
Uh,
Actually, I've gotten a pretty good response. In fact, I spoke at lunch today to the South Bay Republican Women's Federated Organizations. The South Bay is between Santa Monica and the Palos Verdes Peninsula here in Los Angeles County. And there are about 60 ladies there. And I told them what was going on and told them about the plan that's underway to merge the United States with Mexico and Canada within the next few years. And there were a couple of gasps, a couple of people nodded their head, yes, we understand that, but nobody threw anything at me or disagreed with me. They came up afterward and bought the book and asked me a few additional questions. I guess it depends on which audience you're speaking to. Certainly there are some audiences you have to lead them down this path carefully and kind of explain it step by step. But it's interesting, Dr. Stan, that as you know, Karl Marx and the Communist Manifesto that he published in 1848, one of the things that he called for was the United States now, where this is critical, this is extremely serious. In last March, March 2005, President Bush held a meeting at Baylor University in Waco, Texas, and he was the host of the meeting, and President Vicente Fox of Mexico and Prime Minister Paul Martin of Canada attended the meeting with him. And after about an hour or so, they came out and announced at the press conference they had agreed on the North America, the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America. And in fact, that is the subject of a brand new chapter in my newly expanded book, Fighting Immigration Anarchy. The chapter is titled Bush and Other Elites Merging the U.S. with Mexico and Canada. And I carefully and independently researched this chapter. It's about 18 pages long. And I don't go into decades and decades of history about how the insiders are seeking to destroy our middle class and merge us with other countries. I really focused on that meeting last year, and then subsequently on the in July, when the Senate and the U.S. House of Representatives each passed the Central American Free Trade Agreement, also known as CAFTA. And these are all part of the same scheme.
Hold that off right there. We'll be right back with Daniel Sheehy. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest is Daniel Sheehy, and we're talking about the effort to unite the United States with Mexico and Canada, and really it's an attack on American sovereignty, and of course the President Bush, and of course the people who surround him, and John Kerry and the people who surrounded him all support this because they have no loyalty to America. These people are globalists. That is why they want to ship our jobs and our factories and our wealth overseas and gradually lower the living standards of the average American. And they're in the process of doing it. The average wage, considering inflation, is actually falling. They know exactly what they're doing. You may make more money, but it'll purchase less because of inflation. And the ultimate goal is to raise our living standards to that of the Bolivian peasants. So pick up the story there, Dan. You're talking about this meeting that was held at Baylor University, and this idea of was this sort of a sphere of influence, or what were they talking about?
Well, it's the they call it the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America. They think that, or they're going to try and sell us on the United States is going to become more secure and prosperous by merging with Mexico. Of course, that's ridiculous. But we know that they agreed at that meeting to merge the three countries, even though they didn't tell the media that or the American people, because just 2 months later, in other words, last May, the Council on Foreign Relations published a report. It's really a book. I have it here. I'm looking at it right now. It's about a 60-page report published by the Council on Foreign Relations, and it's titled Building a North American Community. And they say so in the book, that the three leaders, Bush and Fox and Martin, at the March summit at Baylor, they agreed to merge the countries and to merge the economies and to merge the cultures and people and to call for the free movement of people by the year 2010. So in other words, if this plan is fulfilled, and I'm hopeful it will not be fulfilled because I believe the American people are waking up to this scheme and to the invasion of our sovereign nation. But if it is fulfilled, By the year 2010, there'll be the free movement of people. So there'll be no more illegal immigration. And it doesn't just mean the free movement of people that are in Mexico, in the U.S. and Canada. It means people outside of Mexico and Canada can come in through those countries into the United States. And as part of this scheme here, they're going to make us fingerprint us and make us take scans of our eyes, all of these biometric identifiers. They're going to redistribute American money to Mexico. They're doing it already, but they're going to do it even more so. And this is what this really will be, is a North American union.
In fact, wouldn't they really like to have a common currency for all of North America?
They do, just like the European Union. This would be the North American Union, like the European Union, that where the borders are being erased and there's a common currency, the euro. So that's what's going on. And as you pointed out, the goal is to bring down the middle class down to the level of the third world peasants, and to make us dependent on their welfare state, the food and housing and medical care and travel and everything. And right now, of course, the middle class is shrinking. As you pointed out, our government is outsourcing, shipping our jobs overseas, and the jobs they can't ship overseas, they import this cheap peasant labor to take the jobs that they can't ship out. So, of course, these so-called free trade agreements are also part of this scheme. They're throwing everything at us. My personal opinion is because they are starting to see that the American people, more and more of them across the country, are awakening to what's going on. I believe the globalists, the elitists, the super rich, are accelerating their plans in hopes of beating the clock here and getting ahead of the American people.
And, of course, the one thing they fear is that there will be enough American people who really care about their country. And, see, on the other side, I think it's going to work as rapidly as they can to consolidate their dictatorship, because that's really what they want. They believe in noblesse oblige. They believe that they have the right to rule. They don't believe in the Constitution. They would, of course, then simply circumvent the Constitution, although they know it is the law of our land. And these people are lawbreakers. And they bribe our congressmen with favors. They control the media. And, of course, anybody who dares to tell the truth, you know, will be vilified and demonized and marginalized. And you'll never see them on any of the major television programs across America. And, of course, if you go along with the system, why, you'll do very well. You'll get a fat contract. You'll be promoted in your job, whether it's at the university or in government or in the military. You go along, you get along, you fight the system, they'll destroy you. And maybe you'll end up like Gary Webb did, with committing suicide by shooting himself in the head, not once, but twice. The first shot maybe didn't kill him, and so he shot himself again. Are we sure he was going to be dead? Do these things really happen in America? Well, those of you who listened to our last hour's program will know that they do. I think it's vitally important people understand that we're dealing with people who have a different world vision. They have no loyalty to the United States. And we're increasingly moving into a situation where we have a very wealthy class and then a very large poor class. We're seeing this, of course, with General Motors and Delphi. Delphi is planning on lowering of the wage scale of its workers from about $28 an hour to $12 an hour, and benefits cutting dramatically as well, and with the idea that if you don't want to work for us, fine, we can find people who work a lot cheaper, and I'm sure they can. They call them illegal immigrants. So go ahead and pick up the story there, Daniel.
Yeah, well, of course, they want to control everything, and they're you know, incredibly greedy. They want everything. In fact, Congressman Tom Tancredo, one of the few great patriots working on Capitol Hill, when I interviewed him for my book a couple of years ago, he told me, Dan, it's all about control here. And, of course, we know this is true because these people in the White House and the State Department and the Pentagon and the CIA, these are bright people. These are Ivy League graduates. These are not stupid people who are doing this, and it's not just currently. This has been going on for decades, slowly eroding the middle class, bringing us down to the level of third world countries, And we see this, of course, with these judges who are allowing corporations to abrogate labor contracts, which, as far as I'm concerned, is illegal. And so they're using a number of tactics, and I have to, you know, I have to give them credit. They're brilliant, and they're patient. They're very patient.
There's a wonderful quotation I've used in a couple of my newsletters. It comes from a General Nasser, Colonel Nasser, who ruled Egypt from 1953 to 1971. And Colonel Nasser said, "The genius of you Americans is you never make simple, stupid moves. You make complex, stupid moves," which leaves us wondering if we're missing something. Let me repeat that. "The genius of you Americans is you never make simple, stupid moves. You make complex, stupid moves," which leaves us wondering if we're missing something. Well, let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, our leaders don't make stupid moves. They may appear to be stupid to the general public. Oh, bumbling idiots, my goodness, how could they be so incompetent as not to know what was going to happen on 9-1-1, or to get us into a war with Afghanistan to catch Osama bin Laden and then not catch him, or getting us into a war with Iraq because we thought there were weapons of mass destruction, but there weren't any. Ladies and gentlemen, our leaders are not stupid, bumbling idiots. They know exactly what they're doing. They just want to appear to be stupid, bumbling idiots.
Well, exactly. Even Hurricane Katrina, you know, the so-called liberal media saying, "Oh, Bush and the others they're so stupid, they're incompetent." That's the word they use. Well, I'm not so sure they're incompetent. I think that they didn't create the disaster, but they. They didn't take any precautions. They didn't do anything to protect the people, to save the people. And of course now they're using illegal alien labor from Mexico to do the work that black Americans would gladly be doing if they would be allowed to do it. So all of these are all tactics. And again, these are not stupid people. These are brilliant people. They do control the media. And, we're in a lot of trouble. I mean, that's a fact. We're in a lot of trouble. Their plans are accelerating. This book that I alluded to earlier, the Council on Foreign Relations report titled Building a North American Community, published last May, they say in here they use the word urgency.
Now, can you actually buy that book or do you have to get it off the web?
I purchased it off the Internet in just this past December. I wanted to use it. I wanted to take it to my speaking engagements because there have been some people who don't believe me when I say this, so I want to bring the book with me, and they can certainly rifle through it if they want.
Can you buy it from the Council on Foreign Relations? Will they sell it there at the headquarters?
Now, you may be able to. I didn't purchase it from them, and off the top of my head, I don't remember where I purchased it. I did a Google search, and I found a shipping house, I believe, in Pennsylvania, and it cost about $16 plus $6 for shipping, I believe. So, and it's a very, very informative, valuable report. It really explains a lot and what they're planning for our country and how they're going to erase America. And of course, as you know, Dr. Stan, and I'm sure many of your listeners, can connect the dots too, if this should come to pass, if this should come to fruition, we would no longer be a sovereign nation. And what that means is we will no longer have a Declaration of Independence or a Constitution or a Bill of Rights.
You will have the same rights that they have in Mexico or in Cuba or in North Korea.
Right.
And we will live under an authoritarian government. And the freedom that we enjoy today will simply become a remembrance of things past. People say that could never happen here, and I'd like to ask, why not? Halliburton was recently given $385 million to build concentration camps in America. Why do you think they were given $385 million? Have you read the latest Army report on how to handle civilian prisoners in military camps in America? We've got it if you'd like to see it. It couldn't happen here. But are you sure? Well, I guess this evening, as Daniel Sheehy, we're talking about his book on the immigration invasion, and of course it will be available. Is it available at all now, or are people going to have to wait till it comes out?
Well, the first edition of the book is still available. You can go to Amazon.com, for example, and I see that the last couple of weeks a lot of copies have been purchased. I think many Americans are wakening up to the mobs in the streets, so they're probably searching around for a good book, and I think they found a good one. The newly expanded edition of my book, as I said, will be available on Amazon by the end of this month, and it will be in major bookstores across the country beginning in May. But they can certainly purchase the first edition of the book, which is very good, too, and they can go to my website, fightingimmigrationanarchy.com, to read about the book and also to see the new cover of the new book. And I have excerpts in there, and there's information about my background and a number of endorsements from various people who are fighting this illegal alien invasion. So the book reads, I didn't want to write a book of lots of facts and figures. Of course, it has facts and figures, but I wanted to write a people book, a book that kind of reads like a novel. I wanted to make it, for lack of a better word, entertaining, because this can be kind of a dry subject. And a depressing subject, and I wanted to make it more of a book of hope and inspiration, and write about the American patriots who are battling to save our nation.
Well, Chris, you would be talking about the Minutemen. You're probably talking about Chris Simtox. You're talking about Congressman Tom Tancredo. But the trouble is that there are so few people already involved in the fight.
Well, I disagree with you on that. I track this so closely. It's really become my life and my passion. And more people are awakening and getting involved. And that's the important thing. And there's so many ways to get involved, and so many that I haven't thought of. And I really, when I speak to people in my talks, I like to tell them, you need to take control. You need to take action. You have more power than you realize. But you have to get involved. You can't just pray to God. You can't look to your neighbor to do something about this. You can't look to Tancredo to do something about this. Certainly they're doing something, but you have to do something too. We need more people to get involved and to emulate actions that have already been successful, and to also come up with their own actions by forming citizens' councils and brainstorming, and I think we can take back our nation piece by piece. Forget the White House, but just take it back by the communities. And we're seeing that. In fact, yesterday the Arizona legislature passed a bill that would give the police the legal authority to arrest illegal aliens. It still has to go to Arizona Governor Napolitano. We'll see what she does. But in here in Riverside County, here in Southern California, I believe a few days ago, the Board of Supervisors of the City the Board of Supervisors also agreed to allow the police to enforce federal immigration law. So good things are happening. More people need to get involved. I am a very optimistic person, and I like to be a positive person. I know the seriousness of the crisis. I know the whole big scheme, but I'm certainly not the kind of person who's going to just let it happen, and a lot of other people feel the same way. They're not going to let it happen either if they can do anything about it.
All right, fine. We're going to be back in just a moment as we bring other stations right on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Daniel Sheehan, and we're talking about his book on the immigration invasion. And then, of course, the plea is get involved. Right now they have legislation in the House of Representatives, not too bad a bill. And, of course, the only reason that they have a bill that is not too bad is because of mass phone program to the congressmen. So the big problem is the United States Senate, where there are people there who hate America. And they want to destroy this nation. They want to do away with our sovereignty because they're globalists. And what you want to do is start calling them. And, of course, here in California, while we have Dianne Feinstein, who's going to be running for the United States Senate in November. And she is going to, ordinarily, she really could care less how you feel. She has her own agenda. But when it comes to getting reelected, why, she isn't going to want to have people mad at her. If she had 100,000 calls from concerned Americans saying, if you don't get this immigration situation straightened out, you're not going to get reelected, then we're going to organize people all across California, and we're going to retire you as a traitor to our country, and you are a traitor because you voted for all of these globalist programs, of which immigration reform that you're suggesting is part of it. Caller. Call enough once. Call her many times. And send her emails and send her faxes and get other people to call her and call Barbara Boxer as well. Now, she's not running for election, so she's not so concerned about what you think. But Dianne Feinstein is, just as every congressman is, and it's because people have called the members of Congress that we got a bill that at least was not terrible out of the House of Representatives. What are your thoughts about the Sensenbrenner bill?
Well, I agree with you. It's, you know, it's not a perfect bill, but it's a good start. This isn't, there are going to be many battles fought. It's going to take many years to regain control of our country and to get these folks to go back to their home countries and to stop this massive immigration nonsense. It's not going to happen in one day or one week or one month or one year.
Well, of course, the thing is that they enforce the immigration laws.
Exactly.
They would go home because there wouldn't be any jobs for them. They're here because their jobs, you don't have to even build a fence. All you have to do is shut off the jobs. And if they started putting our major corporate executives in prison for hiring undocumented or illegal aliens or illegal immigrants, why would stop tomorrow?
Exactly. Really, we can fix this mess by simply enforcing our existing immigration laws and upholding Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution, which states the United States shall protect each state from invasion. So we already have what we need, but I do believe we need a wall or a barrier or a fence or several fences across the southern border. And, you know, these peasant people need to go back to Mexico and Central America and where else they came, and they need to fix their home countries. The elites in those countries treat the people terribly. Mexico really is a fabulous place. It's very rich in natural resources, has a fabulous climate, as many people know, beautiful beaches. It has more billionaires, that's with a B, than all the rest of Latin America. This is not a poor country, as we're told. It's actually a rich country, but the elites want to keep it all for themselves. So we want to encourage the people who are here in our country illegally to go back home. They love Mexico anyway. They're trying to create Mexico in the United States, so why don't they go back home and fix their problems there? So I'm hopeful I'm glad that you brought up asking your listeners to call their senators and their representatives, and in fact, not just call, visit their local state offices, their local city offices. You don't have to go to Washington, D.C. to visit them. Visit their local offices and pound on the door. I mean, don't do anything illegal, of course. Pound on the door, demand to see these people. They do work for us. And also, I'd really recommend any of your listeners who are on the Internet to please join NumbersUSA.com, which is headquartered just outside Washington, D.C. It costs nothing to join, and you can be one of the hundreds of thousands of NumbersUSA faxers. You can send a fax to your representative or to your senator using NumbersUSA, and believe me, I think without NumbersUSA, there'd already be an amnesty pass, so it's very important, and they need more people to get on board.
Now, who is behind Numbers USA?
Roy Beck, one of the people that I feature in my book, one of the patriots. And Roy's been he was one of the nation's first environmental reporters back in the 70s, and he got involved in the immigration fight in the mid-90s and started Numbers USA, and it's a thriving organization with a lot of great people working on Capitol Hill, fighting to save our sovereignty.
All right, fine. Well, I certainly agree with that. I have no objection to building a wall. Yes, we could build a wall. We should build a wall. But the biggest thing is, of course, to cut off the jobs. So
yes.
It's not either one or the other. It's both.
Yes.
Let's do it. Let's do it now.
Yes.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Daniel C. Here we're talking about his book on the immigration invasion. And if you'd like to give us a call, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question, a comment, there's so many things about what's going on. that the one way is that the media always refers to them as immigrants. These immigrants to our country, well, they're not immigrants. They are illegal immigrants to our country. There's a lot of difference between immigrants and illegal immigrants. So they keep saying we're a nation of immigrants, but we're not a nation of illegal immigrants. And the media has a coordinated effort to confuse the American people by the use of terms. And certainly a lot of these are good people. A lot of these people come here for a better life. But they could come here legally like everybody else does. But they don't want to do that because our leaders have encouraged them to violate our laws. And if you encourage somebody to violate a law, that you too are a lawbreaker. And there are an awful lot of them there working at the highest levels of our government in the Immigration and Naturalization Service. And many of these have strong ties to the Ford Foundation, which is a subversive organization in America, which, of course, was organized by the Ford family, which is always, of course, if you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness has been in, Henry Ford was deeply involved with the occult, as of course with the Rockefellers and the Carnegies. And the only way you can understand what's going on is to understand the spiritual forces which are energizing this effort to destroy what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. Well, if you have a question for Daniel, why, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927 or 1-800 pardon me, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We've got so many telephone numbers, why we sort of get a little confused at times, especially this time of night. Anyway, certainly, Daniel, as we talk about this, how effective are the Minutemen being in blocking immigrants from coming off the border?
Well, I think they've had some success. And, of course, I think what's been most important about the Minutemen and that organization, they began their first patrols in April of last year. I think what's important about it, Dr. Stan, is that they really, while there have been a number of people, and I write about them in my book, who for many years have been fighting the invasion of our country, the Minutemen, amazingly, were able to bring this to the national stage, this crisis, and forced the mainstream media, the corporate media, the establishment press, whatever term you want to use, forced them to cover it last spring. And I think that was really a huge step.
All right, hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Daniel C. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Daniel. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We were talking about the Minutemen, and Daniel was saying that what the Minutemen had done was literally force the major media to cover the issue. What they were doing on the border, of course, that begins to dramatize the problem. And then, of course, the other thing is that, you know, the fact that the president would refer to the Minutemen as vigilantes. Now, that is a totally derogatory statement. Calling the vigilantes discredits them. And, of course, it shows where George Bush is really coming from. He does not want to stop the illegal invasion of our country. He is all in favor of it. He wants to make this problem go away by making all of the people who have violated our laws legal aliens. In other words, legal immigrants. He wants, of course, to change their status so there'll no longer be any illegal immigrants. Anybody can come to America anytime and become a citizen here, which, of course, would wreck the whole basis of our economy, our Social Security, the entire structure of our nation. But America is under attack today. And we are under attack from people in Washington, D.C., who have a different world vision. Because I believe they worship a different God. So you pick up the story there about certainly about the Minutemen and anything else you'd like to cover.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought up President Bush labeling the Minutemen as vigilantes. And what's interesting, Dr. Stan, and please, listeners, listen to this because this is important. President Bush labeled these really grandmothers and grandfathers, you know, just regular folks. Obeying the law and peaceful people. I've met many of them in my speaking engagements. He labeled them vigilantes on the same day that he was there at Baylor University in Waco, Texas, with President Fox and Prime Minister Martin when they agreed to the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America, which is really agreeing to the merger of the three countries. So the same day that behind closed doors they agreed to erase America and our sovereignty, he comes out publicly and tells the media, which was happy to broadcast it loudly, that these Americans were nothing but vigilantes. So, very interesting. That's really a historical day in this whole scheme. That's the way I look at it. And of course, I write about that extensively in my book and provide a very interesting, readable sort of way, a story. I explain how each of these steps happened last spring and then some in the summer when the House and the Senate approved the Central American Free Trade Agreement. And of course, these are so-called free trade agreements as far as I'm concerned, and the Senate easily passed it, but the House, President Bush and Condoleezza Rice and Dick Cheney and others from the administration had to go over to Capitol Hill to twist arms and hand out lots of money so that they could just get just enough votes after midnight to pass CAFTA.
The cost of $20 billion to get that passed. They gave that in the form of bribes to the congressmen for pork in their areas. And of course, you know, when you offer a couple of $100 million to a congressman for projects in his district, it's awfully hard to turn that down and say I'm not going to do it, especially when they threaten you. Now, I call that bribery. I think it's every bit as despicable as Jack Abramoff or whatever his name was, the fellow who's going to go to prison. I think that when the administration bribes congressmen with gifts to their areas to get legislation passed, no man's life or property is safe. And I think it's as criminal as any one of the lobbyists who gives bribes. It's just, of course, it's all right for them to bribe. It's not all right for poor old Jack to bribe or for Tim DeLay to take those bribes.
Right, exactly. And CAFTA, this really is an excellent example. But I think, you know, Dr. Stan, the good news is that they really had to work hard, and they had to twist arms and bribe all of these congressmen just to get two votes to pass it, and they had to extend the voting period. Actually, the House actually voted against it, and so the House leaders, led by Bush, kept the voting open so they could get just enough votes, two votes to pass it. But the good news is that this tells me that it's getting tougher for them to pull off their scheme. More and more people are waking up. More Americans are, you know, pounding on their congressman's door and writing to them and calling them and telling them we've had enough of this. And CAFTA barely passed versus the NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, 10 years ago, which passed much more easily.
You know, I think that every person who voted for CAFTA should be voted out of office. I don't care whether they're a golden boy, whether they're pro-life, or whether they're pro-family values. If they voted for CAFTA, they're traitors to America, and they should be voted out of office. And I think that everybody out there in the listening audience, I should find out how your congressman voted and start letting everybody else know of their treasonous activity. They have sworn to uphold the Constitution. This is an effort to destroy our Constitution and our sovereignty. And start talking about it on radio talk shows. Start writing letters to the editor. Start passing out flyers, you know, every public place that you possibly can. You could make a lot of difference if you really care about our freedom.
Exactly. And Congressman Tancredo, prior to the CAFTA vote, he published a commentary that appeared in at least a few newspapers across the country, and I write about it in my book. And he said that he warned that CAFTA would threaten U.S. sovereignty and allow foreigners to sidestep immigration laws. He said, "The hidden legislation to open the U.S. border is only the beginning." And after CAFTA was passed, you know, just this past fall, as I document in my book, Fighting Immigration Anarchy, the new edition, American corporations began outsourcing production to low-wage nations in Central America, and more Americans lost jobs. So that's what's going on here. They're tearing down the middle class, and these so-called free trade agreements have nothing to do with free trade, really. They have to do with destroying our middle class and our sovereignty.
I think people have to understand that when you see the job statistics that come out to tell us how good the economy is, they're simply lying. Figures don't lie, but liars figure. We've lost 3 million manufacturing jobs since George Bush became the president of the United States. After the Second World War, 50% of our gross domestic product was manufacturing. Today, 14% of our gross domestic product is manufacturing, and it's constantly shrinking. And the plan is, of course, to offshore and outsource our jobs, to send our factories overseas. And if you don't know, the General Motors and Delphi and Dana and all the auto parts manufacturers are planning on moving out of this country. You don't understand what's going on. The largest producer of motor cars and automobiles in China today is none other than General Motors. You're not hearing about that. They know exactly what they're doing. They simply intend to, you know, move offshore to destroy the American based automotive industry. Of course, Toyota and Honda and the others will be here. This is long-range planning. We have a four-tape set based upon a talk that was given in 1969 that explains exactly what's happening in the automotive industry today. It's called The New Order of the Barbarians. Understand, these people have been planning this for a long time, and they're on a timetable, and we've got to disrupt that timetable. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. We're talking about fighting immigration invasion, which is really what it's all about. We are being invaded. And, you know, right recently we've seen these pictures of 500,000 illegal immigrants demonstrating and marching through the streets of Los Angeles peacefully. But how would you like to see 500,000 illegal immigrants marching through the streets of Los Angeles, burning buildings and burning cars and killing people as they go? And you don't think that can happen? Well, of course, we have a contraction in the economy, and there are no jobs, and these people can't get what they want, and they're organized by the communists with the full support of people at the highest levels of our government. That is what's so incredible, and the fact that nobody wants to say that is simply is a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. Well, Darrell, you know, as we see this whole story unfolding, right now, of course, in about 2 weeks, the Senate will be back and they'll begin working on the immigration bill. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, the U.S. Senate, of course, they have no loyalty to the United States of America, and they come up for re-election every 6 years, so they've got it made for the most part. They're going to try and pass some kind of an amnesty. We'll see what happens. You know, I don't have a crystal ball. You know, I'd have to say, you know, common sense tells me they're going to go pass some type of an amnesty, and it'll go back to the House. There'll be a House-Senate conference, and that's where we really, really have to dig in. Everybody has to get involved. All of your listeners have to get involved. They have to pound on their congressmen's doors. They have to call them. They have to join Numbers USA and fax them. They have to tell them we've had it. No more of this. They need our votes. They need our money. They're not going to get it. And this has to be stopped. I believe it will be stopped. I don't believe Congress is going to pass an amnesty before the November election. But, of course, we don't know exactly what's going to happen. I want to just go back a second. It's something you touched on, the economy and the unemployment figures. You know, at the beginning of every month, the President and the Secretary of the Treasury and others, they come out, or the Secretary of Labor, they come out, and they're just so proud to tell you that, oh, my gosh, the unemployment rate has dropped another, you know, fraction of a percent or another percentage point or something like that. Now it's down to 4.8%, they claim. Well, of course, if you open up the newspaper, rather, you know, you see this story about, oh, the unemployment rate is improved again versus last month, yet you see XYZ company just laid off 5,000 workers, and this company over here laid off 3,000, and this one over here laid off, you know, 10,000. So, you know, common sense tells you there's something that doesn't add up here. And, of course, I would imagine that the unemployment rate in America is really probably closer to 9%, because they don't count the people who are the millions of Americans, of 12 to 14 million Americans who are unemployed, underemployed, or have just given up looking for a job.
And I think you're absolutely right. I think that we should understand how frustrating this must be for many Americans who just can't find a job. And of course, you've got all these illegal immigrants. They're standing out in front of Kmart or some of the major stores all across America. They know exactly where to go. And of course, they're being encouraged by their government to come to the United States. They're sending their people up here with tuberculosis, so they don't want to have to treat them in their hospitals. They want them to treat them in our hospitals. They even tell them where to go and where the hospitals are so they get their multiple drug-resistant tuberculosis treated. And actually what's happening all across America is the burden of taking care of illegal immigrants for nothing, which is imposed upon our local hospitals by federal edict, is causing many of our hospitals to close their emergency rooms or simply to close on down. They can't afford to take care of illegal immigrants for nothing. They couldn't get free care in Mexico for nothing, but they can get it up here, and it's because the federal government is encouraging illegal immigration. That's why they encourage these states to give them subsidized education and free education for their families and free medical care, and they can even get all sorts of benefits. And I know a friend of mine who worked for a bank, and she was actually, they got the people from banks all across Northern California together, and representatives of the Federal Reserve System said, now we want to help these people who are here illegally, make it easier for them to send money back to Mexico. How does that benefit the United States? It doesn't benefit the United States. It benefits Mexico, but you see, these people with the Federal Reserve System, these elitists, these globalists, have no loyalty to America, and they want to make it easier for people who are illegally to violate our laws. What sort of madness is that? Unless you understand that these people have a different worldview. What are your thoughts on that? Have you heard about them encouraging the banks to make it easier for people here illegally to send money to Mexico?
Oh, yes. The Treasury Department turns a blind eye to all of this. They allow it to happen. Of course, it's all illegal. They're not everything the illegal aliens, they're here illegally, and they're being employed illegally. They're opening a bank accounts illegally. All of this is illegal. Yet, what is interesting, and I want to bring this up before it skips my mind, and that is, and of course, I monitor the media very closely like you do, Dr. Stan, and these past few weeks when we see these mobs of illegals in the streets across America demanding rights that American citizens have, which they now have no right to, of course, it's interesting that I have not heard our government leaders in the media talking about the, quote, war on terror. And, you know, for 4.5 years, you know, since 9/11, every hour of every day, the media and government leaders have been telling us, we're in a war on terror, we're in a war on terror. Yet the last few weeks, we haven't been in this war on terror all of a sudden. And I think it's because, well, we've got all these illegals marching in the streets, that the government leaders and the media came out and said, we're in a war on terror. American people might put two together and say, there's something that doesn't make sense here. So I don't believe we've ever been in a war on terror. I think we're in a war on the American people.
I think you're absolutely right. I think there is an organized, orchestrated plan to destroy the sovereignty of our country and merge us into a one-world government. And when you have traitors at the highest levels of our government, everybody who is pushing the agenda of the Council on Foreign Relations is betraying our country. The purpose of the Council on Foreign Relations is to create a one-world government. And you can't have a one-world government and have a sovereign United States. But what they're doing is using the military and financial power of the United States to bring about this one-world government. And then gradually, step by step, to force us to give up our sovereignty, to relinquish it, and emerge with Mexico and Central America, and of course with Canada as well. And what the average person in Mexico doesn't want to do that. The average person in Canada doesn't want to do that. People throughout the world don't want to give up their national sovereignty any more than the people of Europe want to give up their national sovereignty. But the leaders, this elite, they don't care what the people want. They're going to push their agenda irrespective of whether they're violating the laws of our country. And, of course, they will destroy anybody who gets in their way. And they have the wealth on their side. But behind them, there are very, very powerful spiritual forces. And until people recognize this is really a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, cultural, and today on an immigration battlefield, until we recognize the spiritual forces that are energizing this move towards world government, why we're not going to be effective. Danny, we've got about a minute before we I have to go to the break, so I want you to, of course, get your telephone number, your website out. How can people get in touch with you?
Well, thank you for asking. Please go to my website, fightingimmigrationanarchy.com. That's fightingimmigrationanarchy.com, the same as the title of the book. And they can go there. They can also find my email address there if they want to send me a note or ask me a question. And again, the current edition, or the first edition of the book, is still available on Amazon.com. The new edition will be on Amazon before the end of the month and in major bookstores across the country in May. It's 341 pages, including many sources and many pages of index references. Very well researched. I spent 2 years writing it, and it's a real page-turner, I'm told. And it really will answer many of your questions and, I think, inspire you to action.
All right. Well, I hope so. It's a great book. We've recommended to you, Fighting Immigration Invasion. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program, Daniel. What I said that we've talked about how people should be involved, and they have to be involved. America is under attack today. The battle for freedom is not being fought in Afghanistan and Iraq. That is a distraction to keep us from seeing we're losing our freedom here at home. How are we going to convince the people of that, Daniel?
You're right. It is a distraction. Of course, we could secure our borders, but they've sent our military and our National Guard to 6,000 miles away to a country that did not do anything to us on 9/11, of course. Your listeners, first of all, hopefully they'll buy my book and they'll buy it for others who have their heads stuck in the sand. Don't look to the White House to save our nation. Save our nation locally, in your communities. You can do a lot, and the American people have more power than they realize. Join MembersUSA.com. It costs nothing. It's the nation's largest internet citizen mobilization system for sensible immigration numbers. Join the Minutemen or give money to them. You can go to MinutemenHQ.com. You might consider running for office yourself. Pound on your congressman and senator's door. Phone them every day. Visit their office. Tell them you want our immigration laws enforced and our Constitution upheld. Cancel your newspaper subscription, turn off the TV because they won't tell you the truth, and visit your local Chamber of Commerce and tell them to stop lobbying Congress for so-called guest worker programs. Don't vote for a particular party because you've always voted for it. If that individual voted for CAFTA or votes for more immigration, throw them out of office. Throw these people out of office, and most importantly, don't let yourself get distracted. Stay focused on this issue, because this massive immigration invasion of our nation is the most important one facing our nation. We are losing our culture, our sovereignty, our money, and we must stop this invasion, secure the borders, enforce our immigration laws, and encourage these people to go home.
And, of course, a lot of our young black men, you know, they are usually the last one hired and the first one fired. And now, of course, the jobs that they would like to get are going to the Hispanics. How do you think they're going to feel about America and America's promise? We got a real problem here. And if you want a divided country where they play black against Hispanic and white against Hispanic and Hispanic against white and white against black, you just allow this to continue on. Great nations fall when good people don't do anything. We have a heritage to save. You want to get Daniel's book, you want to read it, and then you want to heed his warning. Daniel, thank you so very much for being with us. I look forward to having you on our other programs. You've got an important message.
Great. Thank you very much, Dr. Stan.
Good night, and God bless.
God bless you.
All right, fine. Well, that was Daniel C., and just another guy doing his job. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and it's a real pleasure to spend an hour with Daniel. If we've had him on before, we're going to have him on again because his message is important, especially after we've seen these 500,000 people marching through the streets of Los Angeles waving their Mexican flag. And, of course, when it became out that really wasn't effective, it was antagonizing people, orders were given, and believe me, people follow orders to start carrying American flags and dressing in red, white, and blue. It's all a scam. remember how they use words. Oh, these are immigrants. We're a nation of immigrants. Well, sure, we're a nation of immigrants, but not of illegal immigrants. They know what they're doing. They're playing on your emotions. They'll tell you about all these nice people and these kids, and, oh, my goodness, and these poor kids, you know, and they don't want to be sent back to Mexico, and they don't want to lose their fathers who came here illegally, and they've been living here for 30 years, and what madness is this? Yes, there are lots of human suffering. But first thing, we're going to save America. We've got to enforce the laws of this land and get rid of the traitors at the highest levels of government. And sometimes working with the White House itself, people whose loyalty is to globalism, not to America. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. You need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to see the video or the audio tape. You need to watch our video, Iraq, The Untold Story, and get the syllabus that goes with that, because that will take you into the background of why we're really in Iraq, and the Project for the New American Century, which is a small group of people. It's simply a front for other powerful forces, but it's a small group of people who today control our government. And they were planning in 1998 on going to war with Saddam Hussein. It had nothing to do with 9/11. 9/11 was simply a justification for what was planned all along. Maybe that's why nothing was done to stop the attack. If you'd like to understand the attack, you need to get our three pamphlets entitled Foreknowledge 9/11, Part 1, Part 2, Part 3. If you want to understand the spiritual forces behind what's going on, our pamphlets, The Occult Hierarchy, Part 1, Part 2, Part 3. All of this is available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We do hope that, of course, you'll go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. You can get our internet sites. You can listen to our internet programs 5 hours live a day and 9 hours up on satellite. You can pull them down as MP3 format or regular format. And, of course, please look at the various items that we have there in the way of books and four-tape sets. We've got a great four-tape set on immigration, the hidden agenda. That's immigration, the hidden agenda. We have a book called Importing Immigration. It goes into the fact that the Ford Foundation is funding the subversive activities in America. We carry another book written in 1958, but it is one of the five most important books in my library. Foundations, their power and influence, because it's the only book that will tell you the truth about how the power elite have been financing communism during most of the last century. That's Foundations, their power and influence, and of course, Fire in the Minds of Men, written by the Librarian of Congress, James H. Billington, a member of the CFR. But of course, it goes into the background of the secret societies that established the world revolution. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until we're together again, Dr. Stan saying goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.